Welcome to Doctor's Orders with your host, Dr. Baker. Now let's join today's program.
Hello, everybody. It is a fabulous, fabulous Thursday, which we call Trending Thursday here on Doctor's Orders. We've had a really good week with some really special guests, and we're not going to let you down today either because we have a wonderful guest in the space of cybersecurity and Mr. E. Cool Williams of CyberSure. And just laying out the ground rules for Trending Thursdays is our Thursday segment is to talk about things that really are current events, things that are happening to us and in front of us that are literally trending. And so we're going to take a look every Thursday at something that's either new, something that you have to pay attention to as a business owner, and then let's make declarations, smart declarations, on how we plan to engage or interact with these elements in order to make our businesses better. As a reminder, as the only business hospital in the world, my job is to make sure that businesses are healthier, and healthier comes with a host of metrics, and one of those metrics is looking at every portion of your business and making sure that you're sound. It's always unique to me that we would hold one aspect of a business more important than another, and I'll give you an example. The top two things that are asked of me by my patients or potential patients is, hey, doc, I need more marketing. Hey, doc, we need more money. Well, marketing is vital, and money and having access to capital is vital as well. But you can't exclude human resources. You can't exclude legal. You can't exclude your supply chain. You can't exclude the technology. Any of those things can cause your business to crater or implode. So therefore, you have to be intentional and deliberate about all the different aspects and all the elements surrounding your business. So if you have a business out there and you're struggling at any level, or if you just got questions, please don't hesitate to give us a call. Our call-in number is 859-291-2255. And once again, that number is 859-291-2255. And if you just simply want to write in and pose a question, or you want to contact us, you can do that at info@drbaker.us. That's info@drbaker.us. So as we push on forward today with our Trending Thursdays, and I'd already mentioned that we're going to talk cybersecurity, I want to bring in my featured guest, and it's Mr. Eku Williams of CyberSure. Eku, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. How about yourself? Thanks for having me.
Fantastic. I'm glad you're here because we're going to talk about a topic that many people think is either boring or it doesn't connect to them. And I want to make sure they know that they're wrong on both fronts. Would you agree with that?
I would totally agree.
Right. But you know how sometimes in this world, certain things just have a certain connotation to them. And so if we don't know about it, we avoid it. And we think the avoidance is a good thing because out of sight, out of mind. But in your case, that's not the issue with cybersecurity. Is that right?
That's accurate.
Right. So in this instance, tell us a little bit about CyberSure. Tell us a little bit about your role and function there, then we'll go from there.
Okay. Well, CyberSure, what we do at CyberSure, we identify risks that are on your network. We help quantify and expose data on your network, and we trust and verify. So what does all that mean? Well, essentially what we do is we do an assessment of your network, and through that assessment, we are able to help clients really mitigate all risk to put you in a better position so you can have adequate cyber liability insurance. So when we're talking about trending, you know, you have to really think about insurance, things that are going on, people are being breached. And a lot of people know about cyber insurance, think they don't need cyber insurance, but really they do, just like any other insurance, because now in today's world, it's not if it's going to happen, it's when. And because of that when, we help prepare our clients for that. And then we also, depending on the size of the organization, we offer virtual CISOs if you don't have a chief information security officer on hand. You know, certain organizations can't afford one, but what we do is we actually have one. We'll provide X amount of hours that our organization may need. We help with incident response planning. We also do audits as well to make sure that if you do have controls in place, we test those to see and provide assurance to you as an organization that people are actually doing what your policies and procedures state they do.
All right, fantastic. Now, what I want to do for my audience is we're going to do a little bit of education to the audience today, and I'm going to explain why. You know, I speak all around the country on a host of different topics, and typically when I'm looking in their eyes, I can tell if they're following or not. And sometimes it's by body position, but literally you can look in the iris of a person when you're speaking and say, do they understand what I mean? And you may have to break that down. Now, our show caters to everything from large companies, Fortune 100s, all the way down to someone who has an idea in their brain. However, our specialty is small business, which, you know, 50 million and under, 500 employees or less. Well, someone might be out there thinking, well, do I even have a network? Just the word network alone might be too complicated for particular business owners. So what I want us to do is we're going to actually do cybersecurity for dummies in an instance where we make it second grade simple. And when I say that, I'm not saying that as an insult. There used to be a book series out that used to say, do this thing for dummies. So therefore, it would dumb down the information. Let's talk about network, you know, alone. So if I'm a mom and pop shop and I've got four people working there, do I even have a network, Iku, or not?
Yeah, so most people actually have a network. So think of a network really just consists of if you have more than one computer, if you are a mom and pop shop, you have a POS system, if it's all kind of connected and you're sharing the same resource. So you and I can work in the same house. So people at home may have different laptops, but they share the same firewall, they're sharing that same entity in their house, and it's the same thing with business. So everybody's kind of sharing that same connectivity, and that's really what a network is.
So what's really important about that is if you are running a business at all, you generically should say, I have a network. Whether you understand it specifically or not, just know you're affected because you have information on that network that you're using to run your business.
Right. Think to make it even easier, I know a lot of people don't have a home phone right now, but think about that when people had phones in their room, but everybody was still on the same telephone line, if that makes sense. That's a network. So we're all mm-hmm. sharing the same telephone line, but we all have our own unique telephones in our room. That's the same thing with having our own computers, but we're sharing the same network, same line of information, and we're all connected together.
Well, the reason why I'm living on this point is because I've heard countless people say that we're not even big enough to even consider cybersecurity, or I don't do enough in the tech world to have to deal with cybersecurity. And really, that's a misnomer. It's incorrect. It's inaccurate. And really, it's just flat out wrong.
Correct.
Yeah. So when we correct. Right. So when we think about how to set these things up, and you mentioned POS, your point of sale system. Well, when you're taking a sale, so let's say you have a tire shop or you have an e-commerce business, you're also collecting data at that time, right?
Correct.
And that data has to be valuable to somebody.
Right. And that data is valuable to, of course, the client or customer that you have, as well as the company that's using that data. So when we say a network, that information that you retain and you get through the customer the minute they swipe their card, you now have information. You know, that information is stored somewhere. So now that information is stored, that is the network. So you're sharing that same hub of information that's being used. So think about you go into, we'll just say at McDonald's when there's different cashiers, where all the information, even though it's five cash registers, that information is still going to one hub of information that's being shared collectively of all that type of information.
Well, now that you say that, we've received responses previously, and I've heard it countless times that, well, no, that's actually somebody else's responsibility, whether it's Stripe, you know, whether it's ShipStation, you know, whether it's Zoho. They are believing that the other company is responsible for their wherewithal and their protection over cybersecurity, but that's also wrong, isn't it?
It's right. It's yes and no. So mm-hmm. if you are using a third-party provider, you know, then yes, if they own that data, then true, it's a pass-through, right? So that information comes, and then, okay, it goes directly to that third party. But most organizations, they still have or host their own data as well, which you should. But if you're paying them, then yes, majority responsibility is on them, but it's still up to you to make sure that third party is doing everything right. Because at the end of the day, if there was a breach, they're not going to the third party, they're coming to you because you are the face of whom that data was given, if that makes sense.
Well, let's talk about that, because you started mentioning breaches, and I think a lot of times it falls into the reality of, oh, that'll never happen to me. And we know what that looks like, everything from I can text and drive because I'll never crash to whatever it might be, that thing won't happen to me. Well, breaches happen commonly, and one thing I do know is over 80% of breaches actually come out of human error as well. So if we talk about protecting yourself from a breach and you're a small business, well, we know from a micro boutique business, a traditional small business, startup founder, you're wearing a lot of hats, right? You might be the sales staff. You might be the marketing department. You're for certain are the back end office. And as you're wearing those different hats, I mean, is it common in your space to see human error as it relates to how breaches can happen based on not logging out, not having multi, you know, faceted authentication to protect you, on and on and on? Do you see some of that in your field, Iku?
Yes. So let's talk about that, because a lot of people think that when breaches do occur, that it's a breach, but it can be twofold. You know, so an individual that is breached, that means they've been attacked by a cyber criminal and were able to extract or put malicious software on their device, workstation, or network to encrypt or lock down their work and prevent it from happening, which is ransomware. So that's one instance. But when we speak in human error, that is also socially engineering. So there's phishing things that really isn't a breach. So if you come in and I send you a fake email and you change an account number and send that back to a fraudulent email that you thought it was your boss, you weren't breached. You were socially engineered. You were phished.
Well, let's talk about that for a moment. Education. I want to sit on that on that point for a while. It's vitally important that the listeners understand the difference, and that we unpack this in a way that we can then take and use, is that social engineering attacks is not a term that the common person just hears regularly, and if they do, they bypass it. I know it's a term that you all use because it's a staple in your industry, but you've got companies out there that, and I'll give one very popular one, are things that come from the government. You think that you're supposed to send the government this amount of money, this account number, this email address, whatever it is they're requesting from you, because it almost looks like an official government correspondence, but a letter here is missing. The back end of the URL is not there. It's something that is phishing, socially engineered, that then allows you to participate with whatever that attack is. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Okay. So you're actually right. So what these cyber criminals are doing now, they're able to actually emulate emails. They're actually able to copy the URLs, their language. So here's a perfect example of what they're doing now. They're able to breach the network sometimes, and they are able to create what I can say like a rule on Microsoft Outlook, where they would send all emails that are for you to your deleted box. Now what they do is they hold conversations as if it is you to the corresponding individual. So they're able to emulate the conversations, how we would talk. They track that, they emulate that. And then that's how you can, instead of really breaching a network, you're phished, because they've never even got into your Nestle network. They're just getting account information, which they can then utilize and put that information in the bank. So that's one instance. Or, you know, getting the email and not paying attention where it's from. You know, they're using very similar domains that people aren't paying attention to, because they're working every day on a fast-paced environment. So if you're not pay attention to who's sending you the email. And if they're asking you for information, telling you click on this link, something that you normally wouldn't do, you have to pause and really look at that information and say, would someone ask me that internally or externally?
Well, but see, here's the thing. You'd have to be versed on the types of things that you would be asked for in order to ask that question. And it's just to highlight the confusion that you just mentioned. Let's say you've got a credit card with Capital One, and Capital One's URL is CapitalOne.com. Well, they might have Capital with a number1.com, and you think, well, heck, that's my credit card company. Yeah, I'll give it to them. Or no different than with Fifth Third Bank. Whatever it might be is they're going to take something that looks like what it is that you would be used to in a way that seems like, you know what, I should be responding to this, but really you shouldn't be. Which is why it's important to understand these tactics.
Right. And that's why I say the biggest thing really around this between being breached and being socially engineered is comes down to education. Those are certain things that we do at the CyberStore. We actually do phishing campaigns to train organizations on this is a fake email. This is what it looked like. This is how you should handle it. These are certain things that you look for, like hover over a domain, right? So like you said, Capital One, you know, is sending you an email that looks just like it. Like it's not just emails now. So I want to talk about that as well. They're actually able to get phone numbers. So people now are getting, when we talk about trends, they're getting text messages, you know, on their phone that says, I'm from Fifth Third. You know, it looks like you've been using your account. Please click on this link. And once you click on the link, it looks dead on 100% just like a Fifth Third site. But if you're not paying attention to the URL, you're going to put your information into those spots because you think, I need to update my information on Fifth Third website. Once you enter in that information, they got you. So,
what's amazing about that, and I want to go back to the point that I made earlier, is how many hats small business owners wear. So right. One of the things that people hate to do, let's say I'm a barber, you know, I own a salon. Well, I didn't create my salon to do paperwork or to sit behind a computer desk. So because of that, that's actually the part of the job I hate the most.
Yep.
Consequently, it's a part of the job that you have to pay the most attention to because of how much risk lies in the fact that you're not well-versed in what you're looking at. And that's when social engineering is at its best because your mind isn't looking at the nuances. It kind of reminds me of, and I may be dating myself here in this instance, but I'm from Detroit originally, and Big Boy there is called Elias Brothers, and I would go there, and it would have the what's different on this page when you're trying to, you know, when you're waiting for your meal to come out, and you'd have to pick out the fact that this circle didn't have a line on it, and this other circle had another dot on it, on and on and on. Well, you're trying to find those nuances inside of emails, inside of text messages, inside of other correspondence that they're socially engineering you to give up data or to allow them into a place where they shouldn't be technically.
Yep. That's exactly what is going on. So they're measuring, right? So you have a business like that. So it's not about the network. It's about I'm going to socially engineer you to get account information, right? I'm going to hit you where it hurts the most. And that is your pockets for those type of companies. Then the bigger the organization, what is the biggest impact? It's your downtime, if that makes sense. So they're very strategic in who they go after. And that's why it's important that it doesn't matter how big your business is, barbershops to your Fifth Third. Everybody is running into these issues and everybody is susceptible to either being socially engineered or if you have a nice-sized network being breached. So think about a breach, what happened to more often individuals that have, what I always would say is a house, right? You know, if you have a huge house, that's your network, and you have all these openings, right? You have different windows, you have a garage, you have front doors, back doors, side doors. These are all openings which is considered an attack surface. So any place that is open, I can get in. So if there's a gate, there's a gap anywhere in your house, that is where the breach occurs because they're looking for that. So
you talk about having those gaps. So you talk about having those gaps. We're in a climate now which it's going back to what we remember from a traditional standpoint, but remote working. obviously has taken off in a way that wasn't before. Talk to us about the dangers of that in comparison to when you talked about the gaps.
Sure. So from a working from home standpoint, a lot of people are more successful now because, one, they're working from home. So you might be using your own personal device compared to a work. So it's not as locked down, right? So that means, you know, you might have, and I have a child, so you might have your child working on your home laptop. It might go to a funny website they might not go to. Now you've been exposed. Now if you're connecting to your home office, that's what's considered like a back door. Now that your laptop has been breached, you're connecting to your work office. So now you create that gateway to get into your work office, and the criminals are going right in there. You know, people have Ring phones now, or have cameras inside their house. You know, now they're able to go inside of, you know, Ring, or if you have a network at home, and they can actually listen in to conversations that are going on at home. So it's very important, and I'm going to use the word firewall, is essentially make sure you have these certain tools in place, because you want to protect your home as well as your network. But a lot of people are working from home, so they're not thinking about that, because they might have your internet service provider, and they're saying, hey, we're secure, we got you a firewall. But they're giving you the basics of the basics, right? You know, that's just the bland, you're on a network, here's a firewall, and it's really to protect them. But the reality is you need that additional layer of protection inside of your house to make sure you are secure and not losing information along those lines.
Talk to me, or talk to the listeners even more so. I want a couple words defined here. Let's define firewall a little bit more, and let's go back to ransomware. I think that understanding just the sheer magnitude of how ransomware can destroy your company is a powerful story.
Right. So ransomware is exactly what it sounds like. It is software that once on your network, it encrypts and locks down your network that prevents you from working. Right. So now that software is blocking you, the criminal, the cyber criminal or bad actor, what they do at that point is send you a ransom. They say, we have your network, you can't use it, and until you pay us an X amount in Bitcoin or some sort of cryptocurrency, we will not unlock your network. So for it to be released, you have to actually pay.
So now let's talk about that nightmare. What you just highlighted literally is the worst case scenario for a business, let's say, that's doing $400,000 a year. They're netting, you know, about 80. They've got a few employees. They've been in business maybe 4 years. They're kind of on the cusp of being there long term, but they're still not old enough to have legitimate market share, and they're still just figuring their way out as they're scaling. Now they get hit with ransomware. That ransomware is asking them for $400,000, and it has to be done in Ethereum. And they don't even have Ethereum. They don't even know how to convert over yet, so they've got to figure that out. They also have to figure out how to pay it, and they don't even have a system to operate their company while they're trying to figure out this ransomware. I mean, talk to me about a nightmare, right, Iku? I mean, is that bad or what?
No, that's bad, but it's what is actually happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
So the flip side of that is a lot of these cyber criminals who are utilizing ransomware, which is funny but not funny, they actually have excellent customer service. So what I mean by that is they'll actually contact you. They will tell you how to get Ethereum. They will walk you through the steps how to get Ethereum. They will sometimes put you on a payment plan to make sure you can pay it. They'll walk you through how to get your network back up. These guys, they will actually negotiate with you. So say if it's 400,000 Ethereum, hey, I can't afford that. Okay, they might say, well, if you can't afford 400,000, we'll do 150. You know, they're willing to negotiate with you. But the sad part is going through all of that. So So kind of bring it around to what we do at CyberSure is that it's critical to have cyber insurance, right? Because now if you were to get breached, like any insurance, you have a deductible. Depending on your policy, that will actually take care of that. If you can't take care of it, sadly, depending on the amount of how ransomware cost is, unfortunately, there's been companies that had to shut their doors and go out of business because they can't afford the ransomware. And they never backed up their data. So it's not like they can say, you know what, bad guy, you have my data, that's cool. It might take me a couple days, but I backed up all my information. I'm just going to bring it back up. And now that I bring it back up, I'm kind of going to find ways to secure my network now where I kind of failed before. So that's one instance. But if companies aren't backing up their data, then literally companies are shutting down their door. And that is the worst case scenario, but it's happening currently.
Well, you know, outlining this story, and to the listeners, I'm apologizing if you think that this episode is doom and gloom, but my job is to make sure that you're healthy. And so letting you know that a virus is out there in the world, and let's call that your body, or that it's floating, is important for me to tell you that it exists. And these scenarios are real. You know, when we talk about just ransomware alone, I mean, we've got an increase that is into the teens of the percentages, meaning that, you know, and I can't remember specifically, but I mean, we're talking anywhere between 12 and 15% of year-over-year increases in ransomware. I suspect, Iku, and please direct me if you think that I'm wrong in my assessment, but that's going to increase based on technology, based on the acceptance of cryptocurrency and other factors. What do you think about that?
No, you're absolutely right. And going to what we've considered Trending Thursdays, it is not only doing networks now. We have what is considered IoT. And IoT is what is Internet of Things. So think about how now you can control everything remotely. You can control things through your app. You can start cars from your app, right? So, you know, you have Tesla. You have cars that can't drive by themselves. All these things are computers. All these things are on some sort of network or connected to something. The sad part is, because they're connected to something, some network, some which we'll consider an endpoint, if that endpoint isn't protected, these bad actors now are able or starting to control those things. So imagine, like you've seen in the movies, where a car just stops and somebody is controlling it. That's what these bad actors are basically about to start doing. You know, imagine your door, your security house is locked by using some sort of app. Now, if they're able to breach that network, they can control who can come in and out your house by locking you out. So, and that is a personal homeowner. You know, that is your car. You know, that is, you know, apps that are controlling various things. Think about hospitals. You know, bad actors can literally control monitoring, right? I can shut you down at house and you have a health device that's on a network, right? And I can get into that network and shut it down. Now you're talking about life and death. So that is how important security is. That's how important cybersecurity is, the breaches. Again, I'm not trying to scare anybody, but that's just the reality of what is going on, and that it's not going to stop.
Well, I want to talk about that. I'm going to break for a moment for identification, but I want to come back to the security portion of it and some of the overall logic. This today's section and today's segment of Doctor's Orders is brought to you once again by Pro Training. That's Pro, lead one word. You can find our training app in the App Store and the Google Store. It's the only way to train with music. We wrote the patent on how to train athletes with conventional music to increase rhythm, tempo, and pace. You can work out with our NBA athletes, our NFL athletes, our MMA fighters. Whether you are a sports enthusiast, whether you're trying to get in shape, whether you're learning how to throw a punch or self-defense, you can learn all that in our Pro Elite Training app. It's a premium model, meaning that you get hundreds of drills for free. So please download it today, subscribe to it today, and increase your physical, you know, acumen and your overall health and wellness for Pro Elite Training. So going back to what you were saying, Iku, as it relates to security, you know, one thing that hits my mind in our current digital footprint of how our lives are connecting to the IoT or Internet of Things is that, you know, people have purchased Ring because, number one, it was a cool technology. I can kind of see my house all the time. But it's also done for a protective measure. You have renter's insurance to protect items inside your home. You have homeowner's insurance to protect your home and other items you may have. And you have insurance on your vehicle. If you bought expensive jewelry, you'd put insurance on that. So my point is, there's insurance on things that we think are important. You know, you've got disability insurance, you've got life insurance. Now our life is interconnected with technology in a way that I think we couldn't even imagine back in the 70s or 80s or 90s. This stuff was more for television and fiction. But now it's the case. Why is it that we've come along so slowly in adopting the fact that cybersecurity is necessary, not even nice to have, and that we should really educate ourselves on all of the, essentially all the different issues that come along with our digital footprint and how to protect it? So my question once again is, where do you land with your clients, the conversations you have regarding just the mentality toward protecting yourself in the cyber world?
Well, it actually goes back to one of the first things you said at the very beginning of the segment. You know, you have companies, both small and large, that don't think they need it. They don't think I will be affected by whatever type of business it is. And that is just the reality. You know, one of the things that we talk with our clients about now is not only do you get cyber liability insurance, but it's getting the right insurance, right? So I was actually speaking in Houston last week, and I compared it to when we first get our first car. You know, one thing you do know is you have to have insurance to drive, you know, and when you're 16, you're just like, hey, I got this kind of broken up car, I'm going to get liability, you know. But once you understand that liability really only protects the other driver, you realize, wow, I want to get full coverage, because if something does happen, I at least want to get my car fixed as well. Same thing with cyber insurance. You know, you have policies out there, very general and basic. But if you were to get breached, what does that cost to your business? You know, so now there's insurance policies where, depending on your network, depending on downtime, these things cost. And it's really to understand what your network is looking like. Do you have exposed data? What type of vulnerabilities do you have, both internally network, that need to be mitigated, as well as externally? We take all that information, and then we sit down with the client and say, here's all your mitigations that you need to fix. And based off of that, here is the best policy that you should get. These are best programs that when you get your policy, these are things that you get, because you want to make sure you're protected. Like big organizations now, part of policy is getting legal retainers, you know. And people, if you're watching, it seems like, oh, a lot of people aren't getting, the big companies aren't getting breached. Oh, they're getting breached every day. But what they're doing, they have a retainer with a law firm. What they're doing now is they have PR teams in place. They kind of put things out there to make sure nothing negative is being said. You know, if you get breached, just like anything, when you take it to your car gets broke down, the first thing you want to figure out is what went wrong, right? So there's a cost. So there's forensics that come in that looks at your network and say, okay, we found where they broke in your house. Think about when your house gets broken into, the first thing you do is call the police, right? Hey, come in. What happened? Police, they look through, they do research, they do fingerprints. Okay, well, we opening here. It looks like they came in this window, and then once they got in this window, they opened this door, and this is how they were able to break in the house. Same thing with cybersecurity insurance. They pay for that forensics. That's covered by your policy. But if that's not in your policy, then that cost will come out of your pocket. So, you know, then you...
But see, I think you're talking about some complexities here that I'm not even sure that the people are ready for. And here's what I mean. You gave the example of being a 16-year-old and you knew that you had to have insurance of a type. So you selected liability because, you know, you had an inexpensive car or a beater, if you will. Well, in today's climate, they don't even know they need the insurance. It's for certain not mandated. So even saying you need insurance becomes the crux of the argument. Then once you recognize that there's a need there, now, what type of insurance goes into everything you just mentioned? But I would say that not only is the insurance something that's unknown, meaning that it's not widespread desire, there's a lot of education that has to go on to make business owners understand the importance, but even what they need to do to protect themselves, even if they don't have the insurance.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It does. And so,
looking at their daily practices and what are they paying attention to and are they training their staff and do they have checks and balances and measures put in place to ensure their overall safety based on their skill set and resources that they have. And then the next level is to say, do I have a right carrier or a right company that's helping me navigate this while insuring me?
Yep. So it's a combination. So even if you're not insured, you know, it's certain steps that you can take to take preventive or proactive measures. But again, depending on the size of the company, their first thought is, let's be honest here, depending on the size of the company, it's how much they can afford. So you're talking about capital liability that organizations don't have. Your small mom and pop organizations, they're not thinking about, well, I need this type of firewall, you know, to monitor and track incoming, outcoming bad traffic. You know, you're not thinking about those certain things because you're, one, you can't afford it, period.
Well, I don't know. See, I question that, and one day I can't wait till I'm on this show and I'm able to argue all the time. Right now, everybody agrees to stuff. But in this case, I want to argue with the business owners that tell me what they can and cannot afford. And the reason why I'm so passionate about that position is, and you know this, Iku, I talk to businesses every single day from around the world regarding their personal matters. And if you ask them, okay, well, do you have a pro forma? Who does your budget? Who's in charge of this? You would be literally flabbergasted and shocked by how many companies do not have a formalized pro forma. And we're going to talk about that tomorrow on Financial Friday. But you'll also be shocked by the companies that have an inadequate person looking at their finances. In many cases, it's just them. Right? So they're like, well, I can't afford that. How do you know you can't afford it? Well, who's to say you should be buying this as opposed to buying that? You know, they don't even understand what they are purchasing or why they should be purchasing or where they should be investing. And so I'm making that argument right now to say there's certain things that from a risk standpoint, you just can't tolerate to have. You have to understand the makeup of your business and then adequately fund that business for your long-term success. I'll give a stat here that it just always rings in my mind. One of the reasons why we exist as a business hospital is that there's 134,000 new businesses a day that are created, and 42% of them fail within the first 6 months. Your top two reasons is that they're undercapitalized, one, and then number two, they have the wrong human capital, don't have the right people. Well, the undercapitalization doesn't come because it just isn't money available. They don't have enough money for the behavior that they're expressing. You following that logic?
Yep, I am.
Right, we're putting dollars to the wrong stuff, and then we run out of it. And we're not protected in places we should be protected in. So someone might say, well, should I over-insure myself? Well, the answer is no. We know that insurance is only good enough for in the event that something happens. The problem is that when something happens, it can be catastrophic. And that's what we're talking about now, is that the Internet of Things has made cybersecurity a need, even though it's not mandated. What are your feelings on that?
No, I agree. You know, that makes perfect sense. And that is what we run into with clients, right? So you might have, what I would say, a client knows they need our service and they quote unquote find the money. You know, I used to work in banking. I've been in IT. You know, IT is always they always need stuff, right? Because IT is constantly moving. So it's always, well, we don't have the budget for that. But then the reality is, being a previous auditor where I would provide recommendations, depending on the shareholders and depending on the issue, they always found the money, right? So you absolutely hit it on the nail. It's really funding it, right? You know, having it in the budget, and it's really working for that, being proactive. Now you have to have things in your budget, you know, work with an accountant and find that money, right? And then now you can fund that once it's secure. You can fund that IT. You can fund, you know, okay, we have insurance. You know, you can move money around, but it's really what's truly important to you. And until it hits you, and what usually happens, they've been hit, they've been breached, something has happened, and it's like, oh my God, now what? And I always tell people, even when I did auditing and IT for close to 20 years, that either pay now or you're going to pay more later. You know, so that is the reality of the situation, especially when it comes to technology. So it's really...
Well, you know what? I want to look at that. I want to look at that from this perspective. I'm going to throw something out there and tell me if it sticks or not. But you've got organized crime that is really at the forefront or at the head of, you know, these breaches, these cyber attacks. And when I'm talking organized crime, I'm not talking mafia or the mob. We're not talking about trying to find where Jimmy Hoffa is and the Teamsters. We're talking, these are, you know, you mentioned how great their the criminal customer service is that these are highly efficient, very smart, highly intellectual individuals that are formulating where they want to attack, how they want to attack, what algorithms they're writing, how they want to fish. So you're not dealing with individuals that are just snatching purses, which means that if you're in an industry that is notorious for gaps in your systems, not paying attention to how your company should be backed up, or notorious for not taking insurance, I would say that these cyber criminals, they even know that information. Is that right?
Yep. I mean, it's sophisticated, it's organized, they know what they're doing, they're highly intelligent. And you're absolutely correct on that, to that notion.
Well, that means that if the person I'm dealing with is sophisticated in their behaviors, then by implication, I have to be sophisticated in my protection. Does that just make logical sense?
It makes perfect sense. But then the question really becomes making the organization, the company, or business understand that. And that is, I believe, why I'm on the show. This is why we exist. It's really that next level of education for them to truly, truly understand that.
Mm-hmm. And education is key, right? And that's why, you know, for you listeners out there, when we talk about Trending Thursdays, is that, you know, this was selected to be one of the first topics because we're just not paying attention to it as much as we should when we're looking at, you know, our businesses. You know, as a reminder, the show exists to help small businesses operate in a more healthy fashion. So what we're telling you is that as you engage in the Internet of Things, as you continue to work remotely or engage in more technology, you've got a scenario where you have to think about what's the ramification of your digital footprint. How much of that is out there? You know, one thing that, you know, hit me literally in the gut, just for the people, not so much for me personally, was the issues that Facebook had. And, you know, with the breach that they had, and Zuckerberg had to go before Congress to speak about how did they let that happen. And I remember watching that saying, Zuckerberg is in control of everyone's personal lives. I mean, he literally is a lowercase god when it comes to everybody's social events, behaviors, birthdays, interactions, trips. All of that is, he's holding the data to that. Am I wrong in that, Iku?
No, you're right. You're right. And, you know, and that is, he asks and states in small print, but people will just click, you know, approve or check the box, however that may be, so they can use the app. But yes, he has all data, and that is why he was pulled in front of Congress, because it's really, what are you doing with this data, all this personal information, and not only, who are you giving it to, right? Like,
just, and at the time, he was working with an entity overseas, over in England, and he was working through there, and the reason why I'm bringing this up is, that's a large, I mean, it's hard to get larger than Meta, in which they weren't Meta at the time, but it's hard to get larger than them. And they still dealt with a massive breach.
Yep.
Well, hey, what do you think it's going to be for a restaurant industry that is known notoriously for being bad financially? You know, it's not a secret amongst bankers. It's not a secret amongst investors that the restaurant industry is very difficult to deal in. Well, in that case, how are you dealing with your technology? Now you've got Uber Eats and DoorDash, and you've got people making their living through delivering the product where that wasn't the case before. And you've got all these interconnected realities. Well, guess what? There lies the opportunity for gaps. And it just tells me that organized cyber criminals would understand these gaps, and they're going to fish in those ponds.
That's exactly what they're doing. They study it. They understand the business. I mean, depending on the size of the organization, the reality is, and this is a stat, it on average now, depending on how big your network is, there the cyber criminal is sitting in your network watching you for close to 287 days before they are found. So what that means is they're watching your every move. They understand.
Well, no, we can't go to your next point. We can't do it because you just said 287 hours have been watching. Now, I used to be in the automotive industry, and when I worked in that industry, check this out. When I worked there, we knew, or at least one thing that I would tell my staff as director of sales, I know that somebody knows what vehicle they want by the time they show up to the dealership because the data told us that they had already seen that vehicle and had done research for nearly 16 hours. You're not going to look at something for 16 hours and not know what the features are, what the gas mileage is, what the overall price points or the range of the price points are. So therefore, the conversation you should have with that potential buyer should be highly organized because you know what they know based on those 16 hours. And here you go kicking me right in the stomach saying, these guys are watching you for 287 hours on average. That's a lifetime to understand some stuff.
No, that's not even hours. That's days.
Or days. You're talking, yeah.
You're talking about sitting in there, watching you, emails flowing, data transactions. They're watching all of this. And what they're doing, they're tracking it. They're seeing how your business runs. They know exactly how to lock you down. Then they figure out, okay, on this network, these files, this directory, this is the most important amount of information that they have. Now I'm gonna put it under lock and key, and that's how ransomware happens. Or I'm able to emulate emails. Now I am a conversation between Aku Williams and Dr. Baker. They both went to University of Cincinnati. I'm gonna use what they used in emails within the past 6 months. Now I'm gonna act as if I'm Aku, and I'm gonna lock his email down, and I'm gonna start conversating with you. And then ask you some questions, which might throw you off, but it sounds just like how we would contact you. And I give you that information, not even thinking that a coup would never ask for to change that business account number, you know, or, you know, double checking on that because we've been talking to each other for the last, this is how we talk, you know,
mm-hmm.
not think nothing of it. And that's when you talk about organized, that's how organized they are when they get into your network.
You know? Well, you know, I made a point earlier on one of the previous shows about having experts in and around your business to ensure the overall health of your operation. Well, in this instance, it couldn't be more on stage and more highlighted because almost no one is an expert in this space. And the reason why I'm saying almost no one, not the common person. The common person does not spend time learning about the things that you guys do at CyberSure. It just isn't the thing that they do. They're not classically or traditionally trained in it. They're not getting certified in it. They're not going to webinars or seminars and conferences. So that means that whatever people know, they know casually. And they're hearing stories based on media, but they're not getting the real data. They don't understand how these things directly affect them and how it correlates to the longevity of their business or the instantaneous catastrophic failure of their business. And so with that, talk to me a little bit about how do you all go about educating the masses? I mean, obviously you're in business like anyone else, so you need to exchange currency. But a big part of that, I imagine, nothing from what you told me, is that you have to spend a fair amount of educating them. And I'd like to know, how do you guys go about educating the target audience to let them know that this needs to be on your radar?
Well, a lot of the pieces of education is we do seminars, we do webinars, you know, we talk at various conferences, you know, my partners and I, we speak at tabletops. At this point, people want the information, and that is a huge part of what we do from a business standpoint. It's really sitting down, doing presentations, making sure, doing Q&As, making sure, do you understand what is cybersecurity? You know, what are things that you should look like on your network? You know, what do you need to do to be secure? And not only that is, how do you prepare for cyber insurance? Why is cyber insurance important? Why do you need it? Then how do you prepare for it? And how do you continue to mitigate these risks? That's that piece. Then you talk about really just educating the how do you prevent social engineering, what that human error piece that we talked about, that majority of the issues that create the breach that opens that door when that person leaves that open is the human error, not paying attention, you know, really having a true understanding of what is going on in today's world when it comes to phishing and social engineering, which can create a breach. You know, again, you know, if you click on that bad link, that can allow the breach to your network, but there's also that human element of just not paying attention to the email and emailing back the incorrect information, giving someone your account number because you're not realizing this isn't the person who I should be emailing. So then they don't even have to get in your network. You just provided them your user ID, your password, and account information. You might do, think about an accounting office or you're doing invoices. You know, one email that you're not paying attention to, they ask you just to change the account number or the ACH or the wire, and you thinking you're going to one company, now it's going over to another country. That fast, and the money's gone. So it's so many elements that when it comes to just security, you know, being cyber aware, cyber awareness is huge right now. And that is a big...
Well, talk to me a little bit then, because you make some really good points on that. Talk to me a little bit about how, if you've seen it at all. I know I personally don't see it nearly enough, but any of these companies being proactive with their employees and the rest of their staff about how to make sure that they're good. So, I mean, do you see them training them? Do you see them with, you know, prevention plans, with, you know, how to deal with early detection software? Are you seeing any of that out there amongst your clients to where you guys are really just bolstering what they've done, or are you kind of starting from scratch in most cases when you're talking to companies?
It's actually a combination of all the above. So right now we are helping clients with your, what I would consider your cyber awareness training, right? So that is implementing, doing phishing campaigns. And this is when we create an email. We send this email out to your organization, both big and small, and then basically saying who's going to fall for the trick, right? Who's going to open up the email? Who's going to click on a link? And who is going to actually enter in the information? We're able to track all that information, and that's part of your awareness. That's part of your training, is to go back and say, hey, John, I see you were not smart enough to catch this, and you enter the information. If this was a real fake email, our network could possibly go down. But you also have companies that are being very proactive. They are doing cyber awareness training, you know, quarterly, if not annually. You know, we suggest you do it more often than not, because that's how fast these cyber criminals are working. So you need to be as educated as much as these cyber criminals are trying to attack. You know, you have more companies paying attention to putting more monitoring services in play, putting email filters in play where you're locking down certain instances, right? So I suggest that depending on the organization, people not check their personal email on their work device. You know, again, people don't realize I might go to Google, go to my Gmail, my work email, while I'm at work, but again, I'm on the work network. So if I click on that wrong spam email and just to open it up thinking it's from Amazon and it's not, and I click on something, I just open a gateway for that breach.
But see, you just said something that I think is vitally important. Hence the reason why people have multiple email addresses is they think they're separating that risk. It's not just, you know, for my personal stuff, send it here. For my business stuff, send it there. And they think it's being separated. Now, it is at a level, but it also isn't if you're on that network doing that behavior.
Absolutely correct. And that is why a lot of breaches do happen on network, because they, in their head, which is correct, this is my personal email. This is not my work email, right? Two different things, and they're absolutely correct. But you're on your work network. That is where the education needs to begin, is saying, regardless if it's your personal email, you're opening it up on our work website, you know, you go through, think about, you know, at work, sometimes you have your internet, right? So you think your internet is locked down, but some companies, they'll allow you on your internet to still access external websites. Once they open up that door, now you're creating a pathway for anything to happen.
But see, you also know that you're dealing with, when we talk about the human error side of it, is that a lot of these protective measures can just be annoyances, right? Let's just talk about it. You know, you're trying to, you know, finish out your gold pass for Kings Island and it's blocked. And you're like, well, heck, I don't have time to do it later. I need to hurry up and do it now because I got to get the kids there on the weekend. And so it's an irritant because you can't get permission to go to a certain site. But nevertheless, the company is saying, heck, I can't afford for you to be trying to buy a gold pass through a third-party entity that you actually thought was selling gold passes and wasn't. Now, all of a sudden, you know, we're all at risk for your weekend activity or the fact that you have to sign into multiple things or your computer has to time out in, you know, 60 seconds as opposed to 5 minutes. So every time you blink, you're signing back in again. And you're irritated about that, but locking the computer down, excuse me, prohibits or minimizes the amount of phishing that takes place. But, I mean, do you hear a lot of complaints regarding what the preventative measures may actually cause and how people actually feel about it, so they'd rather take the risk as opposed to the preventative measure?
Yes, and that is a constant battle with our clients. It is a hindrance. We're tied to changing passwords. We don't want to go through all that, but it's not limiting the amount of phishing. It's limiting your risk exposure, right? So that's the biggest thing is you have a higher risk when you leave your labs. We'll just use that perfect example. You get up from your desk, you walk away, and the average person doesn't lock their PC, but you might have a policy through your organization that if you don't touch or do anything on your computer, it locks after 10 minutes. Some organizations feel that's a hindrance because of how they operate. But the risk is, if there's bad actors, say someone doesn't like you, you know, you walk away from your computer and it doesn't lock automatically because you didn't lock it. Now I could go on your PC and do whatever I want to do. You know, that's a risk. But yes, I'm tired of my computer locking all the time. I just got up just to go ask a question. Now I got to come in and type in the username and password. But just that little bit of time that you have to do that, you have to be able to, we educate our clients on the risk level has just went down. Now they can't get into your computer because it's locked, you know. Passwords, changing passwords. These bad actors, they're able to emulate and use common passwords right now. So people are like, you know, I'm tired to change my password every 30, 60, 90 days. I can't keep remembering them. Again, if you don't change them and you keep using that same password, these bad actors, cyber criminals, they're able to figure it out because you might be using that domain. You know, we'll just say, you know, Dr. Smith at, you know, hospital.com, but you use that on your Amazon account. You use that on your Yahoo account. You use it at your Home Depot account.
Well, we got to pause there, Iku. We got to pause there because we're against the break. Real quick, we've got CyberSure. You can find them at CyberSureLLC.com. That's CyberSureLLC.com. Once again, I'm Dr. Baker. This is Doctor's Orders. Iku, thank you so much for joining us today. We're going to have you on again because it's such an important topic. I appreciate the time, and I thank you so much.
Hey, no problem. Anytime.
Absolutely. For those out there, remember, our call-in number is 859-291-2255.
Thank you for joining us for Doctor's Orders. You can contact Dr. Baker by phone at 1-855-249-4677, by email at info@drbaker.us. You can learn more on our website at www.drbaker.us. Be sure to tune in every Monday through Friday at 2 p.m. right here on 1320 AM, 103.9 FM, and on www.1320thevoice.com.